episode 195 of Divided by Werewolves. I feel like this episode is on borrowed time. We've had two audio disconnect weirdness things already.
Yeah. So hopefully
we'll weather the
storm. What would the world do?
Exactly.
Without episode 195.
Exactly. If you're in, I don't really know. I'm assuming it's a global thing, but if you're, you know, if you're on the internet today, it's April 1st. That the day this is out, obviously we're recording that.
I was about to say, man, that's tomorrow. Don't fuck with me like that.
So today is the fucking annoying, don't trust anything stupid. It's a lot better than it used to be. There was a time when it was just like,
I'm going to get at least three messages about a Chrome Hound sequel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to fall forward at least once.
Like, I mean, I remember the days when, like, you know, the game sites would, like, completely reskin and they would do, you know, and you were just like, what the fuck? And thankfully, public backlash has been to be like, you know what? Will you knock it off? Like,
Don't get
our hopes up.
What a bullshit thing. Like, it's just so stupid.
Right.
Like, why is there a national day where, like, everybody's like, oh, we're going to troll everybody. Just get the fuck out of here. Like, we don't do that enough. Like,
well, that's the thing. I mean, April Fool's Day made a lot more sense before the internet, right?
You know, right,
like,
exactly.
Like, pre-internet, it was like, ha, 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 I put salt in the sugar container.
Right, exactly.
You know, my mom would have whooped my ass if I did that shit.
Right.
You know, but, you know, now that we have the internet, some people just don't know how to act right. Like, that's just not
cool. Like I say, we have the internet, so it's the other 364 days are exactly the same thing. So right. It's like, why the fuck do we celebrate it on this one stupid ass day?
Right. Exactly. All right. So we have a bunch of movies to talk about, and more importantly, we have one movie both of us are going to talk about, and then two movies only you're going to talk about because I haven't seen it. I am not as worldly a theater goer as you are.
I have turned over a new leaf as of here lately, so.
Let's get into, let's do the one we could both talk about.
Sure.
So this one hit Shudder a couple, not this past Friday, but the week before, written by Indiana Bell. And directed by Josiah Allen and Indiana Bell. And that is You'll Never Find Me. So this is very much in the same kind of... If you watched, It Comes at Night, and you were like, God damn, like, I want more of that. Like, this is absolutely your jam. This is, you know, very much all mood, build up. There's only two characters, really. Brendan Rock plays Patrick, and Jordan Crowe plays this woman.
The Visitor?
She's called The Visitor.
Yeah.
So we don't really know her name. But basically, you know, the movie opens, and he's hanging out in his trailer. It's one location kind of
movie. It never leaves the trailer he's in.
Yeah. So he's happy drinking in his trailer. I mean, he's not happy. You could tell he's not a happy dude. Sitting alone, you know, at his table. And we still there? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Skype's making noises.
And
gets a knock on his door, and it's the visitor, and she's basically like, "Hey, you know, can I get a ride? I need a car to get into town." And he's just kind of like, where the hell did you come from? That you're here at this trailer, like the gates are closed, you know, like what the fuck's going on? And she's like, oh, I fell asleep at the beach and my friends went home. And so as the movie goes on, you very much don't really know what is happening simply because her story keeps changing. She's clearly distrustful of him and he acts in a way that really kind of like anytime she's like, well, if you could just drive me to the front, and he's like, you know, he always has an excuse as to why she can't leave, you know,
right.
Oh, you know, the gates are closed or, or the, you know, the, you're not going to be able to get a car. I'll drive you in the morning when the storm's done, you know. Oh, you can, you know, if you want to take your sweater off and then you can dry it. Or if you want to take a shower, you know,
and you're freezing, go yeah. take a shower. She's right. Like, no, I'm good. He's like, yeah, no, real quick, go take a shower.
Right. Right. So the movie kind of keeps going back and forth to where you're not really sure what's going on. Like at one right. point he makes her soup. And she pours it in his boots because she thinks he's going to poison her. But right. he's just kind of like makes a joke about it. Like, oh, if I have to go outside, I guess I got to find another pair of boots. Ha, ha, ha.
Right, right, right.
She's
right.
like, I'm sorry. And he's like, nah, it's cool.
It really was like, it really is. I don't know, whoever the director or writer, it's a masterclass in mm-hmm. like in atmosphere and fucking with your expectations or right. what you think are happening and what is really happening and stuff. And for like, I don't know, 90% of this movie, I kept going back and forth as to what I thought was going on.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, so good.
And then even when you get some clarity at the end, it's still not entirely right. clear.
Yeah.
Like for him, it, I feel like it is, but in terms of for her, it's not. I think there's kind of multiple interpretations as to, you know, who the visitor was and what her role was. Right. But the way, you know, there's so many, you know, there's plenty of movies, you know, that have turned, you know, kind of like, if you think of like Knock Knock, right. Which is, you know, the way that this, you know, kind of like these two attractive women, like super hot women, show up in the rain to this guy's house and then have sex with him, you know, and how this, it turns from this.
They really like pressed the issue, but at the same time, he had every
opportunity
to say no.
Right.
But he couldn't do it. Right.
Like, right. And then it completely fucks up his world. So right. there's plenty of movies, you know, I think that kind of play with that. You know, this notion of, you know, this kind of woman, you know, or women showing up and the guy's kind of doing the right thing, but then obviously doesn't want
to
do the right thing.
He's trying so hard to, but right. at the same time, they're smoking hot. Like, so,
right.
like, he's also just a man. Like,
right.
You know, that kind of thing.
But then in this movie, it's like, you know, he wasn't like that, but he was also.
No.
The way he was just so pressing, but not being pressing, you were like, oh, this guy's done this before. Like, this is not.
Yeah, I kept going back and forth.
Yeah.
And that was the thing with this movie. This is why I enjoyed it so much, because I'd be like convinced. I'm like, okay, this guy is like, he's got something going on, right?
Right.
But then I would be. If something would happen, and I'd be completely convinced.
Right.
I was like, "Oh shit, she's a vampire,
or right,
she's
right.
A, she's a siren,
yeah,
or she's yeah something, right?"
Right.
And yep. then at one point, I swore it was going to be like that movie, The Triangle, where it was like time manipulation movie. And shit was going on, because like when he heard like the noises on the roof of the trailer,
on the roof. Yeah.
And then when she was in the bathroom, what she heard was a later version of her who escaped through that window and shit. Mm-hmm. I was like, I made this way more complicated than it ended up being head while I was watching it. And that was part of the fun for me, you know, of watching it.
Right.
And ultimately, like, it didn't really go there. It, you know, what it ended up being, I liked.
Right.
But, man, I made it way more I made it way more complicated than it was.
I definitely feel like this is it kind of like in some ways the last Benson and Moorhead movie where
Something in the Dirt or whatever.
Something
it was,
where it's like, you know, the kind of the build up where they find, you know, the object, and it's like, what the fuck is this thing doing?
Right.
You know, the build up to the end, even though I thought the end was amazing, I almost felt like that was more important. And this is the same thing. Mm. You know, the close quarters of the trailers, their performances, the sound design, the way that
sound design was amazing.
The way the storm would sound like screaming, would sound like a like a monster roaring. It would sound like not like in the way that storms can sound sometimes, especially when your brain is doing weird things at 2 a.m.
And also, so, like, man, you want to talk about just somebody knocking on a door scared the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah.
The way that it was done in this movie, when you were already so uneasy, and they're both sitting there, and then suddenly...
And he's saying, how there's these kids at the trailer park, and they're and fucking with them. And
you just hear this aggressive knocking. Like, that shit scared like the pounding. Shit out of me.
And so I agree with you. I do feel to some degree that the buildup in this movie was more satisfying than the ending. And I don't think and the ending is not definitive enough in my mind to where if you were to like rewatch it, you'd be like, oh, okay, like it's still
right. You like know, you think the cues that it gives you don't necessarily lead you to where it ends.
Right. And I think that's good in some ways, because I think that's what allows you to have some of your own interpretation as to, you know, what the visitor's purpose was or you know, who the visitor was.
Well, I'll tell you, by the end, the thing that I really like, that what resonated with me was like it took – not necessarily the very end, but just when kind of you kind of realize, you know, what kind of was happening. I kept going back to Maniac. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, this is a lot like the end of Maniac.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love that movie, but that movie also ends in a way that you're like, it kind of leaves it up to you to decide whether things are real or not and shit like that.
Yeah.
This very much felt like that for me.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. I mean, it was,
I really enjoyed it, man. Like, when you put it up against the other shit that Shudder's been giving us here lately.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, we didn't talk about it. Like Satanic Hispanics was hit recently. And that was, you know, that was a fun time for sure.
Yeah. But, I liked it. Well, that one was like, you know, you watched it on Shudder, but I had like pre-ordered the Blu-ray because it was, you know, a new Mike Mendez joint. And I love me some Mike Mendez. So I watched it a while ago. And then like it wasn't the kind of thing where I was going to be like, I don't expect you to spend money on movies for us to do on the show. And I knew it was going to be on Shudder, but like I got the Blu-ray hit like way before and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, you know, and it's. For a lot of the stuff, I don't mind, like, you know, once you see it, we could talk about it, but at the same time, if it's not something that, like, blows your socks off, there's no reason for me to, like, try to remember when I watched it a month ago or whatever, like,
right?
You know, what was good and what wasn't.
And like you said, I mean, we've just had so many, you know, kind of misses from Shudder that...
Man, Shudder is not the Shudder we used to know.
Yeah, but...
At all.
One thing that is coming, and this is why I'm so good at this. This is my masterful segue. Mm-hmm. One thing that is coming to Shudder in April, you saw it in Auburn, and I'm very excited to hear about your theater experience because it sounds like it was amazing. And that is Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, it was one of those things. I was sitting here completely alone, and I was just like, I knew that it got like a limited theatrical release. And for the most part, when it comes to things like this, and I hear that they get a theatrical release, you go to like, I don't know, whatever the website or, you know, whatever it is, and it says click here for showtimes, and then they prompt you to enter your zip code.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that, and then they're like, no show times.
The page just says, bitch, please.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So I'm sitting here, and I'm looking up this movie in Late Night with the Devil, which, because I love David S. Malkian, however you say his name. He's such a fucking hero for genre, dude.
Yeah, he's great.
So good. so good. And he loves horror.
Yes,
like he loves horror on a level that like you and I do. Yeah. And so when he does stuff like this and he's like, you know, kind of the front runner, the show runner or whatever, I always want to like do whatever I can to support that.
Yeah.
You know, cause like he writes a comic for Dark Horse about this like horror host. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, a horror host who like, he works for like this network, but also he really does like hunt like monsters and shit.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so, his part in, I mean, it was such an important part in, the Boogeyman.
Boogeyman. He was great in that. He was fucking amazing in, The Last Voyage of the Demeter.
Yes.
Like it's such an amazing, like, story, right? Like such a, it just for somebody who loves horror so much and loves nerd stuff so much, just to hear his like his redemption arc, because mm-hmm. he was, you know, he's, you know, he's dealt with addiction, he's mm-hmm. on the other side of it, you know, all this kind of thing, and just to hear him, you know, just you know, he's like, yo, I always wanted to get into acting and this and that, but he was like, he had a drug problem and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then he got to be in The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was like kind
he
of
was really
his
good
like,
in that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
The little brief part that he had.
Right. But just being given that opportunity, and he's done nothing but like build off of that. And
right.
just the appreciation he had for that opportunity and stuff, and how he's used that and he has the career that he has now. He's such a cool dude.
Yeah.
And so I go to the app and I was like, yeah, I'll look it up. And I'm, you know, I'm sitting here alone 90% of the time. So, you know, one of the good things about that is I can find out information like, yo, this is playing.
Mm-hmm.
I can just put on my shoes and be out the door in like 5 minutes. Like right. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to find a sitter. I don't have to okay it with the wife.
Right.
There's no wife. I can just go, right?
Right.
So I went to Auburn last weekend, and I got to see Late Night with the Devil on the big screen. Mm. And I'm, man, as cool as that was, my favorite thing probably, like, the movie was amazing.
Okay.
But my favorite thing was when the Shudder logo popped up.
That's awesome.
And it made that noise.
Yeah.
But it was on the big screen.
Yeah.
Man, I was geeking so hard. It was so cool. And this movie's amazing. Like, Late Night of the Devil, my favorite thing I've seen this year outside mm-hmm. of Godzilla Minus One, Minus Color.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this guy who he has like a late night talk show, kind of like Carson or mm-hmm. Letterman, these type of shows that, you know, used to be a thing. I guess they kind of still are with
it's not the same. I mean,
it's not.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And so, he was fairly popular, and his wife would be on the show with him. And then she ended up, she had mm-hmm. a fairly public bout with cancer, and she passed away, unfortunately. And that, you know, it was very public based on the fact that she used to be on the show with him and stuff. And this was kind of him trying to come back from that with whatever his name was. I can't remember. And he was doing a Halloween special. It's set in 1977. And he's doing this Halloween special to try to like kind of get his show back on track and move on from, you know, the loss of his wife, stuff like that. And so he has, you know, guests. So he has one guest who claims he can, you know, speak to the spirits in the afterlife stuff, and then he has this one guy who is a skeptic and he just shits on everybody else.
Mm.
And then there's this girl who supposedly is possessed by a demon, and then her doctor or whoever person like that kind of, you know, deals with her and her thing. And then and the show and the whole movie is literally almost like a behind the scenes of the making of this show. And so when it's the part where the show was happening, it's like exactly what it would have looked like in 1970s.
Yeah, I saw from the set. It looked amazing.
Yeah, it's like the 4-3 ratio or whatever the fuck. It's like, you know, there's like the black bars on the side of the screen and stuff like that. But then every time the show goes to commercial, then in the theater, like, it went to the widescreen. It was in black and white, and it would be him like behind the scenes, like, yo, talking to this guy who was like shit on everybody. He's like, you got to calm the fuck down, this and that, whatever. And then, like, you know, it's literally just that. It's just this production of this show on this one night in October of 77. And whether or not you believe, you know, this guy could talk to the dead or not, and this guy, you know, is the skeptic who's shit on everybody, and then this little girl, and then it goes, like, and it's so fun for, like, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then it goes, as you would expect, right, for something like this or like a Shudder thing, it goes completely fucking batshit off the rails by the end.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's, the production, this guy's show, like, just turns into almost like a bloodbath by the end with this possessed girl. And, dude, it was so much fun. There's so many things. Like, I was sitting there, and I wasn't the only one in the theater. I know, you know, when I got smashed and we were doing the best episodes of the year thing, where I said a million times I was so happy to be in Auburn and not be the only one. This was another one. This was even more so. I expected it to just be me.
Yeah.
And there were more people there than I expected. But, man, when I tell you, I was the only one who laughed at the jokes. Like, this theater was like silent. Nobody was having as much fun as I was, right? So I was laughing at the jokes, even the little like exorcist nods and shit like that. And then at the end, when like everything went to shit and it, you know, and like it basically turned into a massacre.
Yeah.
Like, I was giggling. Like, I was cackling. And you could have heard a fucking pin drop in the
theater. Like, people are like, what the fuck? Like, it's like, I remember when I went to see Nope, right? Like, I get it. I live in God's waiting room. Like, it's all old people. And I went to see Nope at like 1 PM, and it was all old people. And I was like, for real? Like, y'all?
Yeah.
Like, all right, I need to hang with you motherfuckers, because you're cool as shit. Like, I bet none of you voted for Trump. Like,
right. Yeah. Auburn was not prepared for a Shudder original on the big screen.
You know, it reminds
me. Man, I had a blast. It was so fun.
It reminds me of, I watched, because it was on Shudder and it looked interesting. I watched Ghost Watch.
Yeah.
And I had never heard of it. And I watched it because all the, you know, a lot of the times, you know, just like anything in the internet, comments are hit or miss. And the comments for Ghost Watch, there were so many people who was like, oh my God, I remember watching this as a kid, and it scared the shit out of me. And I thought to myself, you know, and so I was like, okay. And it was so much fun, because I, you know, that same idea of this, you know, they're doing a news broadcast, and they're going for this haunted house. And if you were to put yourself in the shoes of a kid watching this, thinking it's real, thinking it's live on Halloween, And everything starts to go sideways, you know, kind of how that would feel. So when then I saw kind of what Late Night with the Devil was about, I was like, oh, man, that shit looks amazing. Like, I can't wait.
Yeah. It's so good, man. I can't wait to hear what you think about it. Because I feel like I said, I'll, you know, your Joe Average isn't going to appreciate it, but I think you're going to love it, and I'm excited to hear you talk about it when you finally get to watch it.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it was playing, but it was like playing in like Sarasota, where it was like not really like it wasn't very easy for me to kind of get to with the time, and then you know, I mean, things leave so quickly that I was like, all right, that's not going to really be an option. And then knowing that it was going to be there in April, I was like, well, that's not bad. That's like a month away, so So I'll wait.
I also, like, one of my favorite things. So I saw it on last Saturday, and then people started people that knew I went to see it started tagging me and shit. Like, Sunday morning, right? Mm-hmm. And they were like, apparently, I don't know how real this is, but I guess it made $666,666 theatrically last week.
That's amazing. I hope so.
There's no way that was like the actual dollar amount, but if it did, that's fucking great. And also, that just makes me so happy for David S. Malkin and everybody else who had anything to do with this movie. Yeah. Like if it's this year's Terrifier 2, like that makes me so fucking happy.
Yeah. I was actually surprised that, you know, I mean, I wanted to go see Immaculate. I had plans mm-hmm. to go see Immaculate, but so y'all remember like last show, I was like, oh, you know, like I'm alone. My wife's traveling. My dog's been sick. Yeah. So that week didn't really get better. in terms of the number of floors I ended up cleaning, and so by that Friday I was like, if I go to see Immaculate, what I will be spending $10 on a really good nap. But I love seeing horror movies in the theater. I mean, you know, it's just so much fun. And I really wanted to go see that in the theater, but I was like, I will 100% sleep through it based on the week that I've had. So, but I was really surprised that Late Night with the Devil got a theatrical release, because it didn't feel like the type of movie that would, like Immaculate would. Like Sydney Sweeney is like, you know, she's kind of the it girl right now, which is well deserved because she's very talented. So,
I talked about this last night on with Jesse. I don't know who that is. I had no idea who she was. I heard of this movie. He was like, he was talking about he was going to see Immaculate today on Easter Sunday, and I was like, God damn it, that's amazing.
Yeah,
because I was going to see Godzilla today, and I was like, man, it makes so much more sense to go watch a fucking nunsploitation movie on Easter Sunday.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. But
I don't know who that is. I never heard of her. I guess she's on some HBO show or something.
So she was on Euphoria. She's very good in Euphoria. She was in Madam Web, which is hilarious. She was in the second. She was on a season of The White Lotus, which is another HBO show. She actually was in a romantic comedy, which I actually have to find out how my watch I could watch that. It was supposed to be pretty good. Yeah, she's very talented. I mean, she's fucking gorgeous. You know, and you know, Sydney Sweeney in a nunsploitation movie, like, I'm all about it. I just was like, yeah, I'll
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty gnarly too. Like,
yeah. Yeah,
whoever I was listening to talk about it, they were like, I didn't know what I was expecting, kind of like this kind of, you know, one of these safe, mm-hmm. like bullshit Blumhouse kind of things.
No,
like,
yeah,
within
not that
the first 5 minutes of this movie, they were like, it's pretty fucking gnarly. Like,
it's not imaginary or whatever the fuck that thing is called.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually like South by Southwest just happened. There was like a bunch of horror movies, you know, that kind of came out of South by Southwest that I was like, fuck, man. Like, I can't remember the last time I was like this excited for, you know, these many kind of, you know, lack of a better word, like mainstream horror movies. I'm like,
yeah,
this is going to be a really fun year.
Finally, right?
Right, I know,
like,
right?
This year's been like pretty lackluster, like so far.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's really hard to tell where, like, kind of the, you know, with between the pandemic and the strike, and I mean, obviously, I don't think the strike is affecting things yet, but it's like, you know, it really is just kind of a weird time, so it is kind of hard to tell, like, where we are with various projects and what work stoppage affected things. So but you also went to see Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2, which I'm shocked. Talk about a movie I'm shocked it got a theatrical release. Like,
yeah. Well, it got like a shadow release or like a secretive release, because it's so weird. It got a very limited theatrical drop, but it was only 3 days this past week, and it was Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Okay.
And so that's the kind of thing where I'm like, holy shit.
Like, only, what, like, blackmail, what right, compromise right, did the right, producers of of Winnie the Pooh, well, Blood and Honey 2 have right, on the fucking right, theater chain presidents that they managed to get this movie in the yeah, theaters?
Yeah, yeah. Well, not only that, but, like, that's when I hear shit like that where it's like, oh, you know, it got almost shadow released. I'm like, all right, it plays, I don't know, Atlanta, if I'm yeah, lucky. Probably Chicago, mm-hmm, New York, and L.A., and that's it.
That there, you have a, like, I looked up when, because, like, Steve was like, oh, you know, Pearl Jam, they're going to do, like, a one-night only thing. And I was like, all right, mm, which to me is, like, I'm going to two shows. I'm so excited. I'm going to go see Pearl Jam fucking at Wrigley Field in Chicago. Like, that's, I awesome, cannot tell you how excited I am to go to that show.
Mm.
I looked up where I could see Pearl Jam in a movie theater near me, and it's nowhere. There's more places in yeah, Mexico that I could see, like, them. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I saw that, number one, I saw that the Rotten Tomatoes score for Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2, Winnie the Pooh, sorry, Blood and Honey 2 was 100% or 90-something percent.
I was like, well, I got to get in on this.
I was like, before it goes down, this has to be like meme. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this has to be like an internet joke, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but then when I saw that somehow, some way, this week it was playing in Auburn, and I was like, mm-hmm, well, I have to go. Like, I have yeah, to. You know, for it was sure, like a Terrifier 2 all over again, right? I'm like, you know, if I want these really weird fucking things to keep happening, and if I want the opportunity to be able to go to these really weird fucking things, I have to go.
Yeah.
And so Thursday night, for the first time, and I couldn't tell you when, I was out in public way past my bedtime.
I was going to say,
to go to the theater in Auburn and watch fucking Winnie the Pooh. See, Blood and Honey Part 2.
I was not, like, I thought the first one was just pure, like, it was like, it was what it seemed exactly, like, they were like, oh, public domain, let's make a slasher movie, and it right, would be terrible, and that's right, kind of, that was basically it. Like, I didn't yeah, think it
that's
was.
That's all it was. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but the second one was better? Was
way better. So,
really?
So the first one, I think it cost about $100,000 mm-hmm, to get made. And the people that made it, you know, to their credit, man, they're horror nerds. They love yeah, cinema. You know, they did the best they could with what they had. Sure. And I didn't hate the first one. You know, it's, you're right.
I'm not going to say I hated it. It just seemed very transparent to me that this was,
yeah,
like, I mean, it didn't make a lot of sense. It just was like,
oh no. Well, I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, it basically all it was, you know, was make him like Michael Myers and shit, right?
Right.
And I thought Piglet was cool as fuck. He was metal as shit. Like, yes, you know, like, he was, you know, because I'm, you know, pigs freak me out anyway. So
seriously?
Yeah, I'll
tell you a story about that when you're done.
It's just something about, you know, something like a monster with like a snout and like tusks and shit. Like, sure, I'm just like, ew. And so Piglet being metal as fuck, basically they were Cenobites, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, without, you know, any of the backstory. they were just like murdered the shit out of people for no reason.
Right.
But then, like, you know, they did the animated sequences and they yeah, told kind of the backstory of Christopher Robin, like, abandoning them, you know, when he became an adult and shit, and going off to college, and they felt like they were just left and stuff like that. So I think it cost like I said, like $100,000, and I think it made something like $440 million or
wow,
something like that. Like, it made a lot of money. So obviously, like, a sequel got greenlit immediately.
Yeah,
and this one, it's exactly the Terrifier model, whereas the first one exists, and it is what it is.
Yeah.
And then, but then, like, the same people are involved with the sequel, and they take, you know, the money and put it in all the right areas.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's very clearly inspired by something like a Terrifier 2.
That's awesome.
Where so the all the costumes look better, the practical effects are way fucking better. They hired a writer.
Oh, nice.
And the guy that wrote this one is the guy that wrote Summer of 84.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so, and that to me, that's the way you do it. Like, uh-huh. Like I'm all for a lot. Like I don't, you know, I mean, we've said a million times, if you can get a movie made, God bless, because it's a fucking miracle.
Yeah. Right.
But when you do, like, and I think your Terrifier 2 analogy is apt. Like, Terrifier was fine. It was Art the Clown is always great to watch, but it's like, there's such a huge leap in every aspect. Mm-hmm. From 1 to 2. So mm-hmm. to see that they do that, like, that makes me, like, excited to know that
now,
they were like,
now,
okay, we took this money and we put it to shore up where, you know, maybe we couldn't have done so in the first one.
And that's not to say now that's not just to temper expectation. Mm. That's not to say that this is an amazing movie. Like,
it doesn't have to be.
Right. But it's fun in all the right ways.
Right.
It still plays itself completely serious. You know, it doesn't – you'd expect something like a Winnie the Pooh movie to have some levity. It doesn't. Like, it's still
– I don't know. I kind of feel like if you want people to buy into it, you almost have to – it can't – like, you like winking at the camera, I don't know. Like, on the one hand, you could be like – yeah, we get it. It's kind of silly. But on the other hand, like, you know, if you want, it's a pretty dark idea that, you know, this kid's imaginary friends, like, devoid of human contact, went insane and started eating people.
Yes. If you break down the very idea of Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
From the beginning, right?
Right.
What that really means. Okay. Right. And then you take away, like, the cartoon aspect or the childlike aspect of stuff.
Right.
And you really look at, like, what it really means. And, like, all these imaginary friends that he had were, like, his emotions and shit, right?
Right, right.
And then you turn those into horror icons, for lack of a better, like, a horror, you know, reflections of those things, right?
Right.
Yeah. It's dark as fuck.
Right.
And it's very violent.
Right.
But, and that's the thing. It takes that violence from the first one, but so basically what this movie is, it's a meta thing, right? It's almost like the Town That Dreaded Sundown kind of reboot thing, right? In that the first movie exists in this sequel.
Oh, okay.
There's this. Yeah. The hot girl that's Christopher Robin's friend is babysitting this kid who's obsessed with, like, horror and slashers and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And, like, Pooh and Piglet and Tigger and, you know, the other one, they're like, they basically are just pissed off. They're getting, like, they're being made a joke out of.
Oh, okay.
Because of the first movie, and they're like, yo, fuck you. Like, we're tired of hiding in the shadows and stuff. And they just basically are like, yo, you know, we're going to start fucking shit up. Like, that's what the movie is.
Right.
You know, it's like they saw the first one and everybody's shitting on it and they got pissed off.
Nice.
And so
it's like Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back.
It's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. Like, except, you know, instead of Jay and Bob, it's a murderous fucking bear.
Yeah. Like, movie poop and shoot
and
returns.
And this pig monster. And I think outside of Blade and maybe. Okay, so outside of Blade and Hellraiser 3 and probably The Collector, mm-hmm. if you know those movies, this movie has the most amazing, like, rave slaughter scene. Like, Tigger unhinged in this movie holy shit, dude. Like, I was just sitting there like, oh my fucking God. So that there's this like this like this rave where like it's not, they're not like, I guess technically they're not furries because they're not like wearing like full costumes and stuff. Uh-huh. But like they have them like rabbit masks and shit like this. It's like, you know, I don't know. I've never really been to like raves and yeah. bars and stuff, you know, those kind of things, but yeah, when somebody when Winnie the Pooh shows up and the people are like, oh my God, your costume is so dope, and he fucking takes a fucking pipe and sticks it right through a motherfucker's forehead and shit, right?
You're like, all right, I am in the right place.
Yeah. And then Tigger shows up and he's fucking just mangling people. Oh, it's, man, it's so good. It was so much fun. It improves on the first one in literally every way. Like,
that's awesome.
Oh, it was so good. Again, is it a good movie? Of course not. But right. but did I have a fucking blast watching it? And am I shocked to my core that I saw it in the theater?
Yeah.
Also, yes.
Like, that's awesome. Yeah. So my pig story. Every year we would rent a house somewhere for like a week and take the kids and go to the beach, and we would go between Myrtle Beach or like Florida, somewhere in Florida, or not Myrtle Beach. Yeah, Myrtle Beach. So we were renting this house in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Yeah, in South Carolina, and they had this kind of petting zoo slash horse thing. And my daughter was, you know, my daughter being a young girl was very much into horses. So we would go. It was like the neighborhood we were renting in. It was like right on the entrance into the neighborhood. So we would pass all the time. So we stopped by there a few times. So this one visit, two things happened. One, they had a deer as a part of the petting zoo. And they had signs that said, do not feed the deer anything except pellets. Mm-hmm. Don't feed the deer anything except pellets. So we're like, cool. So I said to the kids, don't feed this deer anything except pellets. So we went into the room. We went into the office where you buy your tickets, whatever, because they had like pony rides where, the, you know, you could ride them in a circle, whatever. You buy pellets, you know, like out of the old fucking candy machine like that they would have at
yeah.
the grocery store.
Yeah, yeah. So
we got everybody pellets. And but they gave you a paper towel. But the old, like the old middle school brown paper towel that would tear your hands to shreds.
Right.
If you were to use it, not it did not absorb water. It turned it into blades that would just yeah. carve your the skin off your bones. Right. So I said to my kids, like, don't just make sure whatever you feed the deer, it's just pellets. They're like, okay, Dad, great. We're going around, we're doing our thing. And I look around and I was like, God damn it, I dropped my paper towel. And I went to pick up a paper towel, and I looked up at the deer, and that motherfucker was just eating that paper towel, just full on chewing it down. I was like,
"Yeah."
I was like, "All right, I just killed a deer. It's, cool."
Yeah, it's impressive how quickly shit can go sideways.
When you have food
that animals are used to.
I was like, "That what the fuck?" So then I was like, "Oh, we can feed the pigs." Because I had pigs. Mm. And my kids were like, I don't want to feed the pigs. And I was like, no, it's fine.
Yeah. Smart.
They're cute.
Yeah.
They're lovable. They're delicious. Like, there's nothing bad about this animal. This is nature's perfect animal. It's smart. It acts as a garbage disposal. And when it dies, you can fucking dig a pit, throw some coals in, and 12 yep. hours later, you've yep. got a fucking meal. So they're like, they were scared of the pig, but I was like, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm a dad. I love my kids. I'm going to make a good example. I'm going to show you. You don't have to be afraid of this pig. So I put a handful of pellets in the palm of my hand, and I gave it to the pig. And that motherfucker took my entire hand in his mouth.
Yeah.
And then began to swallow it.
Yeah.
I am not shitting you. I was elbow deep in the gullet of this pig, and he was not stopping. And I was trying to figure out how not to freak the fuck out, because both of my kids are watching, and I'm like, he's going to eat me. He's just going up to the shoulder, and it's all coming off. I had to, like, forcibly extract my arm, and from my elbow up was just covered in, like, pig, like, bile, and I don't know how that pig didn't throw up all over, but that motherfucker, he was like, I'm going to eat all of you in front of your children, and they will never pass the butcher's case again without crying.
Yeah, every pig that I've ever, like, had any interaction with, I feel like, was like, I'm going to make you pay for every one of my ancestors you've ever eaten.
Like, are you kidding me right now? Like, I'm trying to do the right thing for my children right now. And he's like, I'm trying to eat you. So we are at a crossroads. Yeah. We're at an impasse.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I'm not going to wait until you're dead. I'm fucking having you right now.
Right. He's like, you're not even going to be dead.
Like, I was like, are you
you're
serious?
Feel
like,
this every bit of this.
I was like, this is some Deadwood shit. Like, they're not, Mr. Wong's not even, like, the body's not cold. And I'm thrown to the, I was like, what the, my wife's just looking at me like, you did this. I've got, I'm, well, I have nothing to do with this.
there's video of me and my children. Thanks to Goose. Video in the Discord of me dealing with animals who, it's amazing how aggressive animals are when they're used to being fed, you know, in a certain, you know, place or like, you know, you know what I mean?
When they know that food's around, they're like,
they're like, the white people who ride through here, hand us food from these bags. And then if said white people aren't feeding them the food fast enough, they'll stick their head in the window and just take the goddamn sack out of your hand.
Yeah. They're like, bitch, I don't know what you're waiting for, but I'm hungry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, I know this game. If you don't give me the food out of that sack, the next motherfucker that comes around here is going to get it. So, you know, if you don't give it to me fast enough, I'm just going to take the bag out of your hand. And that's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get it. So I have a deep abiding respect for pigs. I went to college with this guy, and it was like, we went to his house once, and it was the weirdest fucking thing, because he lived in, his parents lived in, so like Albany is Albany, New York, which is where I grew up, is like Eastern New York, almost like right by the border of like Vermont, Massachusetts, whatever. And if you go south from Albany, you get to like Binghamton, or not Binghamton, sorry, Poughkeepsie, and then you go further south, obviously, New York City. So they were like in that kind of Poughkeepsie area. And like, you know, they had horses. You know, his mom restored carriages. They had so we were like, we're going to stay at Roy's house. And Roy's like, oh, you know, one thing I need to tell you is that I have a dog that hates women. And we were like, what? He's like, yeah, I have a German Shepherd. He hates women. He barks at women, loves dudes. And we're like, okay. Sure enough, we show up. Dog sees my wife. I don't know if we were married. We weren't married at the time. We were dating. And he goes fucking apeshit. So, fine. So, then we're like in their kitchen trying to make dinner. And they had a pig in the house. So they had a Jack Russell Terrier that hung out in the barn and would jump up above the barn. You would see it jump up above the stall barking. They had a German Shepherd that hated women. And then they had this fucking pig. So I'm hanging around. I'm trying to help with dinner that was going to be served on the ping pong table that acted as their dining room table. And the pig comes over and starts like snuffling at my pant leg. And I was like, oh, what's this pig doing? And no shit, this pig moved my pant leg up and then moved my sock down and then bit me square on the ankle. And I was like, what the fuck? And Roy's like, oh, yeah, he does that. I was like, dude, like, what fucking twisted Dr. Doolittle bullshit is this? Like, you've got a German Shepherd that hates women, and you have a pig. You have a pig that knows how to undress you to bite you. What is this?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like when Cousin Eddie shows up in Crucifixion. He's like, You know, once he lays into you, it's best to just let him finish.
Exactly. Right.
Wait.
Exactly.
No, that's not at all what it
was
best.
Right. Like, and then he's like, oh, but yeah, you're sleeping in this room. Cool. Oh, by the way, we don't have a shower. We do have a bathtub. All right. Cool. You know, good to know.
Yeah.
Nice to sit in a soup of my own filth. Love it.
Yeah.
So, but we had a great time. But I was like, Roy, this shit is crazy.
Like, yeah.
But. Yeah, so this is good because now I have two movies that I know I can look forward to. It's very exciting.
I just temper expectations because this is what I do.
Well, no, but
I get excited about something. I'm gonna feel like shit when you watch Winnie the Pooh Part 2.
No. Here's the thing. I felt as if the bones of Blood and Honey were. Like, I felt like it could be a good idea. It just seemed what it felt like was they were so, you know, it was so quick to rush to just get it done because, you know, like, you know, Winnie the Pooh entering the public domain was such a, like, maybe we'd get a flood of all of these things that they were like, fuck it, we got to make this thing now. You know, anytime a movie it kind of improve, and I mean, I'm not looking for deep story. You tell me there's a rave where Tigger goes ham on some motherfuckers with glow sticks and binkies, and I'm like, fuck yes, let's get
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Yeah. No, you don't got to worry about that at all. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to that. And you saw Godzilla X Kong. I don't know how the fuck you're supposed to say that today. I'm hoping to see it.
I don't either.
You know, next
weekend.
Here's
the thing. I don't know why it's called that because it's 1,000,000%. It's a Kong sequel. It's a Kong movie. Godzilla just happens to be in it a couple times, and then he shows up at the end for the monster brawl, but it's a Kong movie. It's not a Godzilla movie at all.
I'm all right with that. I had every intention of seeing it, and then it just didn't work out. So I'm
hopeful. That's one of those things. Like, you know, I get very excited about my Godzilla stuff, and when Godzilla is in the movie, there are so many scenes where I was like, "Fuck yeah!" But then, like, it literally is a sequel to Kong Skull Island. It's not a new Godzilla movie at all. But if movies in which giant monkeys grab slightly less giant monkeys by the foot and slap the shit out of other giant monkeys is the thing. And it was amazing. I was the only one in the theater who was laughing, and I don't understand that.
I was going to say, why wouldn't you be? That sounds amazing. I think I would
it
love
was
that.
Fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was good. It's probably my least favorite of the new MonsterVerse stuff. But
so out of curiosity, because I saw that in the Discord, what is your favorite?
If I'm being a basic bitch, I'm probably going to tell you that I still really liked Godzilla 2014. That's the one that I go back to the most often. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, the biggest kind of complaint about that movie was the lack of.
Yeah, and I'd said that too, but upon rewatching it, I feel like I was being stupid.
Yeah, and I love, you know, King of the Monsters is great, you know, but when I think about, you know, that I got to see most of the other ones with you in a theater.
Yeah.
And you know, that very heavily weighs on my, you know, kind of, reaction to them. King of the Monsters, fucking amazing. I loved that, seeing that in the theater with you and eating Five Guys and all that stuff.
Yep.
And then I rewatched it, last weekend, and you know what? Still really fucking good. But there's just something about 2014 that I just absolutely love. So that's probably still my favorite one. And then, you know, I liked Godzilla vs. Kong. I think that's a really good movie. It's so much fun. It's just monster porn.
Right.
This one, it's still just monster porn by the end of it, but it takes way longer than I expected to get to the good stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what I wanted from it. Right. But I did not expect it to be so heavily Kong related. I probably should have known that based on just what I knew it was. But yeah, man, Godzilla is only in like maybe two scenes before like the big showdown at the end.
Wow.
In which, you know, King Kong with a caterpillar boxing glove fights this weird Mad Max kind of other big monkey with a whip that's like made out of the spinal column of some other creature. That monkey also has a Dollar General ice version of Godzilla. And so like King Kong has to use his mecha arm and the real Godzilla to like combat this other monkey and his whip and his Dollar General. It's a whole thing. You'll see.
I love it. This just makes me even more excited for it.
Yeah, it's the most expensive B movie I've ever seen.
And that's the thing. So at work, somebody was like, "Are all the Godzilla movies schlocky?" And I was like, "It depends on which ones you're watching." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "There are some really good Godzilla movies." I don't know if the MonsterVerse ones, I gave the Gareth Edwards one shit, but the way that it uses, you know, shadow and the darkness, mm-hmm. like to really, to really reinforce this notion of we don't know what the fuck this thing is,
right?
And it's absolutely terrifying. Was fantastic. You know, and then I rewatched, you know, Godzilla versus Kong, and I'd forgotten how much fun it is. Yeah. But, you know, I mean,
and the aircraft carrier scene.
Right.
Good.
But I mean, the reality is I agree with you. I think I loved like King of the Monsters. It's fun as hell. Mm-hmm. But like Godzilla is great and Skull Island is a fucking banger start to finish.
Yep.
Like such a confident, just like we know what we're doing. I mean, so much fun and just an absolute fucking roller coaster ride from beginning to end.
Yeah. And with an amazing cast.
Man. Yes. Fucking crackerjack performances. Like, you know. Yeah, John Goodman, you know
Sam Jackson. Fucking this one has Rebecca Hall and Dan Stevens.
Jesus, I was Christ. So excited when I saw Dan Stevens was in it. I was like, fuck yeah.
Dan Stevens, this is unhinged Dan Stevens in a way that you've never seen him before.
This is
Dan Stevens in the way that Okja had Jake Gyllenhaal.
Right. Like, it's like the guest
off the fucking rails.
The guest continues to be my favorite.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, he's great. He's amazing. But like, and I love Jake Gyllenhaal. But like, if you remember Jake Gyllenhaal in Okja, it's like, oh my Christ. And that's exactly what Dan Stevens in this movie was. I was just like, oh my God. He's like this hippie. This hippie fucking surfer burnout fucking Matthew McConaughey
fucking
scientist guy and shit. And I'm just like, every time he was on the screen, I'm just sitting there like, what the fuck am I looking at? Like, what That's the fuck awesome. Is this?
That's so, awesome.
So yeah. So again, it's nonsense, but like my favorite kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
So.
And I think that's okay. Like, I think that there's, you know, I think there has to be you know, like Godzilla is a many splendored thing. And you can't, you know, you can't put these films in a box, right? Like there are legitimate like there are Godzilla movies that are horrifying reflections on the atomic age and Japan's you know, them being, you know, unfortunately on the receiving end of that, but also their actions that prompted it in the first place, right? Like there are those Godzilla movies, and then there are the you know, wirework guy in a rubber suit, you know, whatever, like going ham on each other Godzilla movies.
Yeah.
And one isn't better than the other. They encompass the full picture of Godzilla and what Godzilla means, not just to the Japanese, but to any kid who ever, you know, at 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon was like, what the fuck is this? And then was like immediately in love. Like you can't, you can, all of that is included in Godzilla. And I think, you know, thankfully we're in a place where we get to see all of those things on the big screen, and you can just pick and choose kind of how you want to consume your Godzilla. And I think it's amazing.
Yeah. And this, and to speak to that, the thing that this, for me, this movie kept kind of reminding me of was this, while it's Kong centric, this was very much the MonsterVerse, Son of Godzilla.
Nice.
But instead of the Son of Godzilla, it was kind of the Son of Kong. And so you'll know what I'm talking about when you watch it.
There wasn't there a Son of Kong? There was a, what the fuck was the name of that movie?
I'm sure I've seen it.
There was. I'm just trying to remember what the name of it was. But yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's awesome. No, I can't wait. I can't wait. And God bless Adam Wingard for continuing to just like make bank on these monster.
God bless, man. I'm so happy for that dude. I talked about this last night when I was talking to Jesse. He's like, this is just a nerd who's like from a town that's like, I don't know, less than an hour away from me.
Yeah.
And he, you know, started making these like shitty homemade horror movies at some point in his life. And then, you know, they were good. And now look what he gets to do. And like, he made a movie, his first movie, Homesick, which I have on DVD. You know, he 90% of it was filmed in a small town, like right near where I am right now. Mm-hmm. My man just like, was shooting his shot. He was like, yeah, I didn't know this role for Bill Moseley to be in. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, we were almost done filming. And then I had reached out to Tiffany Shepis. And then she said yes. So he completely wrote a new role for her and it changed the entire movie. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You know, and then he made a couple of other movies and they kind of hit. And now, and this guy, like, so my friend Mikey, who introduced me to so many kind of indie horror things over the years. He had a friend named Pat, another friend of mine, right? And Pat is in Homesick, which is Adam Wingard's first movie, and Pat gets curb stomped.
Nice.
Yeah. And so like when it was being made, Pat like texted us pictures of like the head sculpt and the head mold that they made and stuff like that. And then the whoever the guy was that was roommates with Adam Wingard at the time, like Mikey knew the guy who was his roommate and stuff. So just, you know, so I kind of I've literally been following this dude for his whole entire career. And so just to see him go from this bullshit homemade Alabama, you know, ridiculous movie Homesick, which makes no sense if you watch it. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Bill Moseley is a traveling razor blade salesman. Like, what the fuck even is that? That's not a thing.
Anytime anybody says the word Mosley, I always think of, like, Midnight Run is one of my favorite movies of all time. Mm. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Robert De Niro, Charles Grodin.
Yeah.
And at one point, the FBI agent was like, you know, so like, Robert De Niro steals the one FBI agent's, and he was a big black guy, I forget his name, steals his FBI badge and like makes it look like his name is Mosley. And so later on, the FBI is like talking to some gas station attendant and is like, he said his name was Mosley. And the other guy's like, I'm Mosley. Like every time anyone says the word Mosley, that's what I think of. Like, I love Midnight Run.
Yeah, it's classic.
One of my all time favorite movies. And not just because like Robert De Niro like lost his he gained a shit ton of weight, and I don't remember what the order was, but like he gained a shit ton of weight to play Al Capone in The Untouchables, and then he lost a shit ton of weight to play the bounty hunter in Midnight Run, and it's such a great movie. But yeah, I always remember like, I'm Mosley. Like all right, yeah, but no, like The Guest, like I love The Guest, like Dan Stevens, Adam Wingard, like talk about just like a complete deconstruction of the slasher movie. I fucking love that movie to death, and now I need to watch it again because we've been talking about this.
or like literally any other Dan Stevens performance, that movie where he was like blind or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was fantastic. He's amazing. I mean, he was in Legion, that show. That shit was amazing.
Yep.
And then you watch him in this and watch him being like this weird burnout McConaughey kind of person.
All right, all right, all right.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm just like, holy shit. Like, I knew he was in it, but I had to like tell myself, yo, that's him. Like when he first showed up, because I was like, I kept waiting. Like, you know, Rebecca Hall's in these movies. And, yeah. You know, every time I see her in anything, it just makes me want to watch The Lighthouse again.
Yes.
And so, like, she's so much better than this. But
yeah,
I mean,
when you watch her, yeah, in The Lighthouse or even, oh, shit, the one that she did, the one she did with the guy who was in Reservoir Dogs.
Oh shit! The fuck's the name of that movie? We're like he ate the baby.
Like, well, we don't know if he ate the baby.
Yeah, did he or did he not eat the baby? Yeah. God damn it!
Did he or did he not eat the baby?
I don't know. That might as well be the name of that movie for me, because that's what I'll always think of. Like, if I think about that movie,
Resurrection.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Tim Roth. Yeah.
Tim Roth, thank you. But, like, she'll do that, but then turn around and do stuff.
Yeah,
as
but
she
that's
is
what,
in these
that's
other
what
things.
Allows her to, right? You take a movie in Godzilla versus Kong and you fucking make bank, and then you can play,
mm-hmm.
you can take a role in Ambiguous Baby Eater 4.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so real quick on the game front, I'm very excited to hear that we'll be able to get a brand new Edge Transit with our brave weapons in Destiny 2. I give them a lot of credit. So they in the last developer live stream, Bungie announced how in Destiny 2 they're bringing back a number of weapons that had been sunsetted, and with new perks and new roles and absolutely gorgeous ornaments. And then they were like, we're also bringing back Edge Transit because, you know, the meme at the time, you know, during Forsaken was like, you would get like, I would like pour my cereal in the morning and a fucking Edge Transit would fall out like that. You got that grenade launcher all the time. So they buffed it up. They're giving it a bunch of extra perks, and actually the perks, you know, the perks make it seem like it's going to be one of the best kind of heavy, you know, weapons in the game. Like the Mountaintop is coming back, but not in a way that'll make it so like, you know, if you do an LFG and don't have the Mountaintop, you'll get booted.
Right.
You know, so it's really kind of exciting to see what they're doing. We're getting a proper horde mode. So that'll be exciting.
Well, yeah, they're also like I think one of the coolest things they're doing is they're dropping raid weapons.
Yeah.
For people who maybe never got to raid, right?
Right.
Like that's one of the coolest things they're doing. And yeah, Mountaintop and Recluse, they're doing some PvP stuff. But man, how cool is it that people who have never got to raid before are going to get to play with raid weapons?
Yeah. So it's very exciting. It's very cool what they're doing. I have been playing Pillars of Eternity, which is like a kind of like Obsidian. It was a Kickstarter based kind of like Infinity Engine game. It's on Game Pass. I actually backed it when it came out and played the version on the PC back when I would like kind of play on my laptop. And it's fine. It's partly, like, unfortunately, I was supposed to, you know, Baldur's Gate 3, the physical edition, was supposed to ship, you know, kind of end of March, and turns out it's going to be between April and May. So I've just kind of been like playing other things, and I downloaded Yakuza Kiwami 2. So like I was going to play that, but the reality is this game, like one of the things, like it's fine. It's a kind of, if you play the Infinity Engine RPGs, you kind of know what you're getting into. The thing that bugs me though is, so this game came out and then they added two DLCs to it. Then they made a collected edition that had the DLCs. They ported it to a bunch of different consoles, including the Switch, the Xbox, whatever. And it still has a fucking bug where one of your characters in your party, if they have like an animal companion, like a wolf or some shit, you will get stuck as if you're still in combat, and the only way to get out of it is to have one of your characters beat the shit out of the animal companion until it gets knocked out. And I'm like, you put out two content packs, bundled it all up in one version, ported that version to multiple consoles, and never addressed the fact that I have to kick a wolf in the face until it knocks out to get it to fucking move again. And I'm just like, come that on. Like,
the
what
fuck is that game? That game that everybody, the Pokemon, not Pal World or whatever, that Pokemon knockoff. Man, like the my Destiny buddy that I watch stream all the time, he played that game, and I was just like, Jesus Christ. Like, I was not prepared for how, like, dark that Pal World was.
At least the developers of Pal World, they were not prepared for how many people would play their game. Apparently, they were just like, to Pokemon with guns, who knew? You know, so to a certain degree, you can kind of forgive them for shit that, like, they were like, oh, wow, we're not prepared for this. Like, but this is like, I mean, Obsidian's been making games for a minute. They had like 77,000 people back this Kickstarter, and I'm still fucking kicking this wolf in the fucking ass to get it to move. Like, come on, man. Like, don't, why, how did this not make it to the top of the list? It seems pretty important. It's very annoying, but you know, but it's I'm not gonna say free, because I, you know, it's free with my paid subscription to Game Pass, and it's certainly holding my attention enough until Baldur's Gate, you know, finally makes its way. And then the only other thing I'll say is, so I had bought like a whole bunch of games during the Steam sale, the autumn Steam sale, which is basically, around Black Friday. And one of the games I had picked up was Half-Life 2. I got for like $2, and Half-Life I got for like a dollar. And so, I wanted to give like Balatro a bit of a break, so I was like, you know what? I'll fucking play Half-Life. So I go to play Half-Life, and I don't know if you played the original Half-Life, or you just played 2, but
So I bought the first one. So I was waiting for the Dreamcast release that never happened. And then I ended up buying it for the PS2. And then, my Half-Life experience basically is almost entirely consists of the orange box.
Okay. So Half-Life, the original Half-Life game starts with Gordon Freeman showing up for work at his very first day at Black Mesa. And he gets on tram and, he's kind of hearing about the everything that goes on in Black Mesa as he's, you know, kind of like on the tram, you know, being taken to wherever it is he's going to work. And I'm like playing this game on the Steam Deck, you know, while I'm watching TV with my wife. And I'm like, you know, this is really weird. I thought I remembered there being some sort of voiceover or somebody talking during this. And I was like, but it's been completely silent. And so then I was like, wait a minute. And I realized I had the volume turned all the way down. So I turned the volume up. Sure enough, there's somebody talking. And I go into the option menus and I'm like, well, I need to turn subtitles on. There are no subtitles. In 1998, Valve did not feel anybody who is hard of hearing might want, or anyone who maybe just couldn't put headphones on at the time, you know, was playing in a shared space and just needed it to be quiet. No, that did not occur to the very talented engineers at Valve. They were just like, nah, we don't ever need subtitles. So the Source Engine, which is what the original Half-Life is based on, does not support subtitles, which is fucking ridiculous, because it was only, you know, like 1998. It was not that far away. And I mean, when you think about like these folks that, like, you know, God love them, you know, they spend, you know, a huge amount of their time, you know, championing for different accessibility options. And only in 1998, no one thought that subtitles would be necessary. So I can't currently play it because I mostly play games on my Steam Deck while I'm watching TV with my wife. And so I have to either like hook it up to my TV so I can play where I can hear it, or I need to, wait. There was a fan kind of like remake of Half-Life called Black Mesa that came out, and apparently that has subtitles, so I need to wait for that to go on sale. And I'm like, that is silly pants. Like, that's ridiculous. That and apparently there was like a mod that had it, but it's like it's not supported anymore. And I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, for Jesse's show, I played The Darkness. We talked about it, I think, last show.
Yeah.
I've still been playing Gris, whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm still playing that. And but the other thing that I did. My buddy Steve, who's the streamer that I watch play Destiny, and I when I do raids and mm-hmm. you know, the dungeons and whatnot, it's kind of those guys, right? He as most, you know, Destiny streamers, has kind of become more of a variety streamer because we're in the middle of the biggest drought. Yeah. You know, content drought in Destiny history. So he started playing Jedi Survivor the other week.
Oh, okay.
And I watched him stream the first half. And it made, and I have it. I just haven't played it. And it made me want to play it. But also, I never finished Fallen Order. So I reinstalled that.
Okay.
For the last couple of weeks, I've been playing that in the mornings before work, and I finished it the other day, which is why I posted
it's a pretty good game.
Discord. Yes, it is. It's frustrating in many ways. The backtracking sucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
But man, once it hits its stride and it's kind of pushing you towards the end.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic game, and I said in the Discord, my second favorite needle drop of Vader's breath of all time for me. It's like Rogue One is like an all timer, but when that happened in Jedi Survivor or Fallen Order, sorry, when that happened in Fallen Order, after I had fought Trill or whatever the fuck her name was, and it kind of looks like you're about to, like, I don't know, maybe like turn her back to whatever. And then all of a sudden you just hear that breath.
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, shit was orgasmic, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I was so fucking hype. And then like, you know, when the rest of the game kind of happens, but man, what a good time the last half of that game is based on, you know, versus the first half.
Yeah. It's a pretty significant difference. And you know, Jedi Survivor, they add some really cool, kind of traversal things and you know, they expand upon it really well. And also narratively, they really, you know, I think they do a really good job of expanding upon just the idea of the Jedi and kind of, you know, what it means to be a Jedi. And it's not just like the standard, like, oh, you know, light and dark type of thing. So I think from a, you know, from a narrative perspective, I think, you know, Survivor really takes the threads in Fallen Order and just really runs with them and goes to some really cool places. So
I'm excited to play it. I think I told Jesse, I think, so the next thing we're going to do is I'm going to play Enslaved, which I've never played before. We talked about it kind of last show about, like, I didn't know Alex Garland wrote it.
Yep.
Like, I didn't, you know, all that stuff. So I'm excited to play that. And I think my plan is to finally fucking finish Final Fantasy.
Which one?
The 16, whatever that one. The we talked about on the best games of the year.
Oh yeah, 16. Yeah.
Yeah, 16. I want to finish that
one. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to finish that because I really like it. It just, like, other things just keep pulling me away from it.
Yeah.
And so I want to finish that, and then you know, and then I have, like, a ridiculous, my backlog is stupid, so I don't know what I'll do after that. But I think that's the plan right now.
Yeah. Yeah, my, you know, for me, it's basically just buying time until Baldur's Gate, until I get Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah. Man, that's going to make me wish you were still streaming so hard.
Yeah, I actually considered kind of, you know, starting it back up once I get it, but, you know, I don't know. We'll see. You know, I'm tempted to, but I don't, you know, for me, it was always like, I was always just like, well, you know, if I play it and people aren't watching, and then, you know, like, is it going to be weird that, like, you know,
well,
so,
you know, I always used to enjoy, like, pulling up when I could, but the thing that I always kind of go back to, I'll always remember. Was you playing, I don't know, it was some RPG, they were like lizard people or some shit. And I remember back then, when I was working in East Alabama, and I used to have to be there on the weekends, and, like, there was, like, this, like, on Sundays when
Sunday
it was my
mornings,
weekend,
yeah,
work,
yeah.
When you'd go live on Sunday, and, like, I had nothing else to do.
Uh-huh.
Not that the only reason I would watch is because I had nothing to do, but
that makes sense.
That I was sitting at work and I was like, oh shit, Brandon is about to be live. And I watched you play, I don't think it was Pillars of Eternity, but it was something kind of like that with, I don't know. It doesn't matter, but yeah, I mean, I used to love watching you stream. So,
oh,
and I know our boy Autistic.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably lose his shit if you start streaming.
Yeah, and that's what we considered for Baldur's Gate 3. I was like, oh shit, to get back into it, like, that might need to be a thing that happens. So, yeah. So stay tuned. You know, it'll be a long summer of me playing, so it seems like a great time to maybe get back into it. But
hell yeah.
Yeah. So, next 2 weeks, hope to be able to craft. I have a plan for grabbing, for seeing Kong versus X, or Godzilla X Kong, whatever the fuck they say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll have that to talk about next week. But then also, whatever it is we decide to get into. So it's been episode 195, Divided by Werewolves. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And we look forward to spending some more time with you in the next 2 weeks. For myself and Mitch, thank you again. Good night and happy birthday.